wasn't sure I'd ever step out and do my own thing. It took this place to do it.
And it is Virginia Tech. This isn't some rinky-dink-ass program.
I don't know if I could follow that one up.
I'm yelling into the void, and that's what I like doing.
Pete, nobody's looking at your tweets.
We're going to recruit our footprint, and we're going to work our tails off to bring those Virginia kids to Blacksburg.
Those situations are the worst when you are on top of another guy.
The relationships are very important to me. That's what this place is built on.
That's your boy. That's your judge of character. I'm going to end up in a Columbia prison.
That 95 Miami is my fondest memory. And maybe the experience after the Sugar Bowl with Wes Worsham and J.C. Price on Bourbon Street. Come on, J.C.
I want to know what you're drinking, Robbie.
It is roasty goodness, even though I was out.
What's the percent on that?
11.
It was a dream come true back then, and it's a dream come true today.
Hey, Mom, why don't you try a rail?
We're going to put this old guy in a grave.
For the love of the game.
And I mow the lawn after work before the podcast.
We just got better, guys.
Welcome to 2D Pokies Under the Influence, a Sons of Saturday podcast. I'm your host, Pete B., and my co-host, Sam, is back from a little vacation. Sam, welcome.
Good to be back, man.
How was the West Coast? Or I guess I should say mountain time, right? That's what you were on?
It's been sons of skiing lately. I went out and I was in Breckenridge with old friends from high school. And Billy Ray and Pat were with some family in Park City. So it was a good time. It's a great time to be out there. A lot of nice powdery snow, some good beer that we'll talk about. It's a great time.
Nice. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can see we've got a third person in the chat. We're welcoming in Colby Crawford from VT Scoop and 247 Sports. Colby, it's an honor. Thanks for being here, buddy.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to it, y'all.
Colby's going to help us with our spring practice check-in. We're going to talk a little bit about the practices that have been. There's only a few left before we get to the spring game. And we're going to get his take on some of the position battles and just the biggest question marks going into the 2024 season as we finish up spring practice here. But first, we need a cheers from Sam. Sam, kick us off.
Well, it is spring has sprung here, and we are only a week and a couple days away from spring game. Like, it is coming up here quick. So my cheers tonight is to spring football being in full swing, mid-season for baseball and softball. Both programs, we'll talk about it. They are doing phenomenal. It's a very exciting and newsworthy spring in Blacksburg, which I'm sure we'll get into. So cheers to lots of content for Pete and I.
Cheers.
I'm on water tonight. A little bit of a post-ski trip cleanse. But I'll have plenty of beer. Plenty of beer to talk about. Don't worry about it.
We know how it is, man. I've been there. I am having a beer, and it's already pretty good, but I'll tell you about it a little bit later. Our third co-host here, he's got to keep his mind sharp because we got some tough questions for him later. To start off, I just want to mention the stuff that's going on with women's basketball. We're going to do a bigger segment on this later, but Kenny Brooks was hired by Kentucky. That happened after me and Mike McDaniel recorded last Monday. And a lot has happened, it seems like, in that past week. VT hired a new coach in Megan Duffy, and we'll get to that later. But she comes over from Marquette. Seems like a good hire and a good fit for the Hokies, but we'll get into that. The men's team is in the midst of a little bit of a portal palooza. We stopped the bleeding just a bit and picked up a guy. We'll talk about him. Softball, number 13 in the country, as Sam alluded to. Both Diamond Sports are rolling. Baseball's up to number 11, 21-5, 10-2 in the conference. And again, this week, there are eight teams that are ranked in the ACC. We took 2 out of 3 from Pitt this past weekend. Huge series with Wake Forest coming up, Sam. They're number 21. That starts Friday in Blacksburg. And we have series coming up against Duke, UNC, and UVA, all ranked in the top 15. So it's going to get a lot harder.
Oh, Miami as well. That little baseball program called Miami. Yeah. So it's things really ramp up. We'll talk about it, but things really ramp up for baseball.
Yes. And I was kind of leaving out the fact that softball got swept, but they did play Duke, who's like number 2 in the country. So I'm not going to fault them too much, but they did drop their first 3 ACC games and they all happen to be right in a row. On a related note to the spring football stuff, we are going to run back the spring game pregame show this year. It's going to be at Tots. Last year was at Sharky's. We're moving it over to Tots this year. It's going to be right after they open. I think they open at noon and the show starts at 12:15. this is the day after the spring jam. So you can come hang with some of the Suns, some of the former players on Friday night, Saturday morning, wake up, get some food, head over to Tots, get a rail. You'll be right as rain. Guaranteed. That's a lot of R's, but you'll be good after that rail. You can watch me, Billy, Pat, Sam, the Boundary Corner guys, Treadmill, Dan from Tales of the Terror Dome. They're all going to be in the house. There'll probably be some other guests that roll through. So grab some cold beer for the hot takes that we're going to have at Tots on Saturday. Colby, if you're around, you should show up. I think, Sam, you were saying families can come to Tots.
Yeah, Tots is anybody until it depends on the day, but at night they'll make it 21 plus. But if you have, you know, family with you, if you're a student who's underage, don't worry about it. You can get into Tots. They'll mark your hand a little bit, but it's a good time. They have pretty good food too. Tots.
Yeah, and for sure. There. At Bots, that's my mom's favorite spot in Blacksburg. Going to Bots, getting the burnt ends, all the fixings down there. So yeah, no, it's definitely a spot.
Nice. A little off topic. Have you guys realized that Blacksburg is like a tater tot place? Yeah. Almost every restaurant in Blacksburg.
I always get them when I'm at Tots. Tater tot.
So Joe's has tater tots, which good is weird for a guy. Oh, the thumbs came
there
up. Yeah,
with the thumbs.
Tots and Tots, obviously, and then Sharky's and Hokie House, both are big tater tot places. I think Lefty's has a pretty popular like tater tot, loaded tater tot appetizer.
I'm a pretty big tater tot guy, so I'm all for it. I
recently realized this. I've been going to Blacksburg my whole life, and I've recently realized that Blacksburg's a tater tot town.
Nice. All right. So I wanted to talk quickly about Brent Pry going on late kick with Josh Pate. He was on campus, was Josh. And the thing that got people a little bit worked up, because 247 put this out on their own account, was when he said VT was Clemson before Clemson. And their fans kind of, I was looking at the quote tweets, I was looking at the replies, and it was all Clemson fans like, nice try, idiot, like kind of clowning on Brent Pry for making the comparison. And then the next day, Pate kind of clarified Pry's comments. Colby, when you were saw the clip, see the reaction, did you think that was a fair comparison?
Well, no, and I was sitting there off camera when they were actually filming that, and when Josh asked that question and the way Coach replied, it didn't, like, make me wince like it was a bad answer. It's just in this age, you know how things can get clipped, and it's just as soon as you say that, it's someone's going to take it the wrong way, and to no fault of like anyone's, you take anything in that context and someone's going to get mad about it. What I think he said was fair. I think Coach was trying to get at the point. When Beamer was here, it was year in and year out, consistently battling for conference championships, dominance, much like Clemson did. Now, the Clemson fans wanted to be like, oh, well, you never had the national championship. And I don't think he was attacking it from that angle. I don't even think it was a slight at Clemson. I think it was just saying this place used to have that consistent dominance, almost, I don't know, a positive comment towards Clemson. But it definitely blew up there on social media.
Yeah, Sam, what was your take on that?
Yeah, I almost took it more to mean the fan engagement and the ability to recruit to a small town out in the middle of nowhere. And if you think Blacksburg is a small town in the middle of nowhere, Clemson, South Carolina, there's nothing there. It's about half the size of Blacksburg. So I think that's more what he was alluding to. Like, it's a pure college football place that managed to build itself into a powerhouse. And also, like, I have a lot of friends who went to Clemson. I have a lot of respect for Clemson. Most Clemson fans on Twitter didn't start watching until about 2013. And if you started watching
Sammy Watkins,
you probably don't know. Yeah, it's like Sammy Watkins, the Taj Boy team, stuff like that. So, oh, well, I don't really care. I bet if you ask Dabo Sweeney, he would agree with Brent Pry on that one.
Yeah, I thought he was essentially paying Clemson a compliment. Like, that is one of the standards of excellence in the sport now. And at one point when Frank Beamer was here and he built it up, we won a lot of conference championships, as Colby said, and did it the hard way and the right way, because you have to. If you're at Tech or you're at Clemson, you can't win at that level unless you're doing just about everything perfectly, your evaluations, your development, all that stuff. And I think any college football fan who knows it well knew what Brent Pry meant. Like, I think most people knew what Brent Pry meant. And when we had Spencer Hall on our show, and most college football fans know who Spencer Hall is and love his writing. And he said, like, Frank Beamer did a better job relatively than what Dabo has done at Clemson. And that's one of the experts in college football, because the floor, there was no floor for Virginia Tech. And going from a national championship program, which was what Clemson had in the 80s, to them now is a lot different from having absolutely nothing to going to a national championship game. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where the difference is. It's a higher ceiling for Clemson, but they started out on a much higher floor. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to note that during Pate's clarification, he shouted out Colby Crawford on the late kick show, which Colby tweeted out yesterday, and that was just freaking amazing. Congrats on that, man. That's huge. Pate is one of the best voices in the sport right now, and you got a shout out from him.
Yeah, that was pretty rad. I was actually sitting in here, whatever, they were reaching out for some spring intel, and me and my buddy, we were had a group project, so we didn't even get to watch it live, so we caught the tape version, and I was like, oh, let's see if he talks about Virginia Tech, and we were like, oh, okay, cool. And then he was kind of getting to the end of that section. He was like, and Colby Crawford. And I was like, wait a second. I was like, did he just say that? So it was pretty cool to see that. And I got a good kick out of it. And I got to meet him, what was it, last Thursday, I think. The same guy you see on camera is the guy, I mean, genuine as all heck. I mean, just a warrior for the sport, fighting the good fight in the media. Really solid guy. So it was great meeting him. And I mean, obviously his show does numbers because he puts out a great product. But I mean, seeing him really operate behind the scenes, it's one of a kind.
Yeah, that's cool that you got to see that in person. Go ahead.
You can tell he's genuinely a college football fan.
Yeah.
Like, he's not just a fan of a team or a league or something that he's covering. He could sit down and watch, you know, Colorado State play a non-conference game versus Memphis and eat it up.
Yeah, same way
that one of those college football fans.
That me or Sam can do that. Pate, you definitely get that vibe from him. And the nice thing about Josh Pate is that he seems to like Virginia Tech as much as he can, being in the objective media. He kind of seems to have a soft spot for Tech. He talks us up, thinks that we should have a seat at the table when all things are said and done with realignment. And so that's nice. Otherwise, in the interview, I didn't have a ton of takeaways. It was a lot of the same stuff. If you watch Brent Pry's interviews, we've heard a lot of it before. There's Allman Brothers reference and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was cool. Definitely worth a watch. And the showcase of being on Josh Pate's show is great for our program. He had Shane Beamer on earlier in the week. He had Mac Brown on. So it's nice to be a part of that club going forward and just, hey, we got the approval enough of that show to come to our campus. So that was cool. I wanted to tell you guys what happened with our best win since 2000 tournament. The winner was Ohio State 2014. It beat out Miami 2003 to become our champion. And I think Sam and I both had a feeling that would probably win the title. Though Miami 2003 gave it a run for its money. It was a lot closer than I thought it was going to be.
I voted for Miami 2003. I just think the game meant so much more in terms of the season. I mean, it was a conference game at home, needed that win. Whereas the Ohio State game at the beginning of the season, non-conference, Ohio State had a lot of quarterback issues, obviously. I think it was I don't want to use the word novelty, but like, it was such a unique matchup for Virginia Tech, and one that the school hadn't really been in a few years against a Big Ten team to play it in the true road game. That was Ohio State's first night game ever, and it was the biggest crowd that they had ever had for a game. And that's the premier program in college football, I would say, over the sport's history. So to get that win in that environment.
It's a team that went on to win a national title.
Yeah. And then almost won one the next year.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was huge. And like, it's a shame for the way that season went for Tech. It's a great, like, what if season, because Brewer's health was really in question.
Whole team
after the Ohio State game. Because like, I think he took a beating in the Ohio State game. And then the very next week, his back was acting up when we took on ECU. He might've even had to come out of the game for a minute in that one. And so big what if season, but an awesome, awesome win for Virginia Tech. And it is our best win since 2000, according to the subset of fans that happened to vote in our poll. And thank you to everyone who did vote. For the people watching on YouTube, do us a favor and like the video. It will greatly help our channel and this program going forward. So if you like the show, just actually thumbs like up. The show. Thumbs up. That's right. Let's get into this football conversation, Colby. Sam, why don't you lead them off with a listener question, and then we'll kind of go through some of the positions.
Yeah, I got a listener question via twitter.com, aka X, from Billy Culture. He says, and this is his question, reading verbatim, "I see spring practice picks and clips, and the team as a whole looks the part. I don't immediately think we look skinny and slow. I used to refer to the Fuentes squads as, quote, the skinny leg goon squad. Now I see a team that could wear SEC or Big Ten patch again physically. How are we feeling from that perspective compared to our conference and national peers? When was the last time you thought we had a scary team getting off the bus?"
Yeah, I mean, they looked the part for sure. And I think the big, you got to tip your cap and not discredit what this coaching staff and support staff has done in phase one and phase two and like into the winter. Like, I mean, all the work these guys do when they get onboarded in the winter, I mean, the weight room, the dietitian, the nutrition plan, I mean, so much goes into it. And like, you see on the message boards and comments all the time, it's like, wow, did he show up game ready? Is he not putting in the work? Like, is he not in good shape? And it's like, really top to bottom. And I'm not trying to be a homer here. Like, the whole squad, there's just a vibe about it that the man next to you is holding you more accountable than maybe even the coaches. It's like a real brotherhood collective vibe that you can kind of pick up on, which varies from last spring. It just feels like this is a team with a mission and a lot of guys coming back with their last year of eligibility, and they want to go out on a high note. And I mean, when you see them out there in live practice, they're flying around the field. There's not, I mean, it's early spring. You're going to see little things, but it's not like the Bad News Bear. So I don't know. Last time you were scared of a squad, I mean,
it's been a while.
Yeah. I mean, 2016, you didn't really know what you were starting the season off with. Maybe, I don't know, 2011, 2010, like when you really,
I would say 11, just because the size of our quarterback.
That's like, what I'm saying. Like, when you have drones back there, I mean, you stand next to drones, it's like people see him in person up close for the first time, and they always comment to me like, wow, like he's a hoss. Like, Montavious Cunningham was on our podcast earlier in the year, and he was like, he's built like an effing truck. Like, he's like a big guy. And I mean, you see it on tape last year running guys over, but I mean, he's dominant. And that's a guy, when he gets out on the outside, a cornerback, a safety doesn't want to have to tackle. So, I mean, that's an asset for Tyler Bowen.
All right, let's move to quarterback. We've been hearing a lot of good things about Kyren, whether it was in winter workouts or into the spring. Does it look like he's taking the next step as a passer in the spring?
Yeah. I mean, we talked to Coach Pryor, I think, last week, and he said the biggest thing, Kyren stepped up all obviously in the winter, as you mentioned, but even into the spring as they've, I don't know, sort of evolved into this next phase, you know, the biggest thing was tighter windows, longer throws. You saw what he could do with his legs, but there was a couple missed throws here and there where you wish you could have back a couple times a game. Now, it didn't really end up costing Tech in games last year because there were a lot of blowouts or there were big losses. But, you know, hopefully this year when you're in those tight games, you need those tight window throws, those on-schedule plays. So I think he's really improved. I mean, we've only seen limited parts in practice, but the rapport you can tell between him and Quan Felton, Ollie Jennings, and Jay Lane, and I mean, these guys spend so much time taking extra reps just outside of practice. I mean, yeah, everyone probably saw the vlogs of him going down to Miami and training with those guys, but I mean, after practice, before practice, in practice, if they have a bad rep, hey, let's do that again. They hold up the whole, I mean, it's really uncommon seeing that. I mean, so the work ethic is there. I mean, Kyren says it himself, no one holds him to the standard that he holds himself to. So he really wants to improve it, and I think he's put in all the work to do that, and he's looked great so far. And it's not just everyone saying that as he came off the end of last year. He's like really looking sharp. So
nice. That's great to hear. Well, let's go to the
one. Go ahead, thing real quick, Pete, is we heard from people who had been to practice and seen things in Brent Pry's first year that one of the issues was it was a bit discombobulated, and it looked like a first time head coach leading a class, and it looked like a team that didn't have a ton of veteran leadership everywhere. And I think you could see that dysfunction lead into some of the games where you have, you know, issues timing at the end of games, issues calling timeouts, you had dropped passes, misblocking assignments. It does seem like we always ask, like, what happened after that Marshall game? We're probably never going to know what happened in the meeting rooms in that Marshall game, and maybe we don't need to, but I would almost guarantee you that practices got a whole lot sharper after that game. And maybe that's what they needed in terms of just setting the tone week in and week out. Now you're seeing it. You have a much more veteran team this year. You have a coaching staff who's been there before and they've been in their positions. Like, remember, a lot of these coaches had never been in the position that they were hired to be at a Virginia Tech. You had a first-time DC, first-time offensive coordinator, first-time head coach. So maybe we're seeing that come to fruition this spring, and we'll talk about our spring football, but that's probably the thing I'm looking at the most is how well-oiled is this machine in year three?
Well, think about, we promoted Tyler Bowen to be the quarterback's coach, and he had never done that before, in addition to being an OC, which he had only kind of done part-time. So it was a lot of new things happening for him too. I want to talk about QB2 because this is a big question going into the season, is has Pop locked down that two spot behind Drones, or do you think that Whitkey is battling there too?
Yeah, I mean, it's still, they've what, 10 practices in tomorrow. So, I mean, you're about 2/3 of the way through spring, and I'd give the slight tip of the cap to Pop, but I mean, the coaches are never going to outright say that. But I mean, to this point, Pop's stepped up second, and I mean, he's looked sharp. I mean, he's definitely, a lot of people question his size, standing at what, 5'10", whatever he was last year, 180, 190.
He was slight, yes.
Yeah. He's put on some good weight, and I mean, he's explosive. There's a clip of him going out and doing a back round off after a touchdown pass. It's like, he's a dynamic guy. But I mean, in spring, you see him hitting guys over the middle. Like last practice, he hit a good over route to XCB. I mean, timing throws, deep posts. He's got a cannon on him. I mean, he's a good guy, and he's had a good spring so far. And Wiki's had a solid spring too. I just say maybe a tick below Pop. A lot's going to play out. And I think the biggest telltale sign is that everyone get your tickets, come up to Tots and hang out on the spring game so you can come see the QB2 battle, because Drones is going to play in the spring game, but it's not going to be like last year. It's going to be a limited. So, I mean, you're really going to see these guys between Whitkey and – what are you about to say, Sam?
I'm okay if Drones plays like two snaps.
Yes.
And then, well, I wouldn't be surprised if it's much more. It might be one or two series. So, I mean –
yeah.
So, I mean
– we might take one or two series.
We saw Pop. Yeah. In last year's spring game, just a bit, he had a couple plays that everyone kind of went, wow, and it instantly became, oh, this guy might be able to play a little bit. And so I think it was kind of a foregone conclusion in the fans' mind that he would win QB2, but it's a credit to Whitkey coming in and challenging him. But it's going to be – it's such an important position because we're putting a lot of weight on Drone's shoulders, and he will run the football. And it's hard – to stay healthy and play every snap in a college football season. And so at some point or another, I have a feeling we're going to be relying on a QB2. Hopefully not a lot, but maybe a little bit. And it's a very important spot. And hopefully we'll get to see a lot of those guys at the spring game. I want to move to offensive line. All right. So the big boys were a problem in the beginning of the year, and they slowly but surely got better. And some of that might have been due to the fact that Crook came in just before spring practice started, and it took him a little while to figure out the right formula for how to teach these guys. But I just generally want to know how you think they're looking blocking up front, but I specifically want to talk about the right side of the line, because I think that's where we have a few question marks. Who are the starters at right tackle and right guard right now, or who's with the ones, Colby?
So right now it's still Clements at right tackle. As of right now, you still have Schick over there. And so, I mean, I know some people were, I don't know, not too excited about that. But, I mean, that's a group that figured it out towards the end of the year, right? I mean, you mentioned Ron Crook. He came in. We were out of whack. The media stepping into spring practice day one, not knowing what's going on. Imagine being a position coach, stepping in, moving your family, trying to figure everything out right before. So they move those guys around essentially every practice. And the other thing with spring, some guys have class. Some guys have to go to a sister's rehearsal, or they have lab, or they have – so, I mean, a lot of the times the rotations we see aren't the fault of an injury or anything. It's just some guys not being available, and they like playing those guys around. You hear Ron Crook say, we're going to put Montavious on the inside, outside. We're going to try Lathe, inside, outside. So a lot of things are moving. They're putting Braylon Moore at center. I mean, Jack Holifield transferred out. There's not another center on the roster behind Caden Moore. So
I was going to ask you about that too, is that do we have a backup center right now? Do you think it's the other Moore brother?
I do think that. I mean, Braylon, you saw a couple practices ago, Braylon was out there taking snaps with Kyron after practice, just working through drill there. And, I mean, I don't know. I think Braylon would shift right over into that center position quite well. I mean, he's kind of had to step up into that assumed role at the guard position. And I think he's done well. I mean, his hands have kind of been tied. And you look past Clements and – I mean, this is a pretty young line. Chaplin, redshirt sophomore now. I mean, a lot of these guys still developing, growing. You got Lathe and Johnny Garrett waiting in the wing. So a lot of high ceiling guys, I think, that could crack the rotation. But, I mean, you still got Clements and Caden Moore, their center, holding it down. So
do you think there was any thought to, like, maybe changing center and getting Caden back to right guard and maybe playing Braylon at center? Because Caden was so good at guard.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they would definitely play around with that. I know Caden's health might be up in the air. He'll probably be good to go. It's just he got a little nicked up at one of those practices, so that was kind of why they're moving Braylon over there. But also just to get him accustomed. But I mean, I think that's not out of the realm of possibilities. Like, they're not going to come out and be like, Caden will be our center for all 12 games this spring. Fall. So it's like, I think they'd be happy to if they didn't have to have Caden at center. I don't think they would. I mean, he was a great guard player. I think that's his natural position. So if they can shift Braylon over there, give him some more time being a redshirt sophomore at that position, I think they'd love to do that and have him there for the next 2 to 3 seasons.
Right. I was almost hoping, and not that I'm not happy to have Cunningham, but thinking that we'd go out and get a center. And so we could do that. But that being said about Cunningham, he comes in and they say he's going to start at guard. And I assume he's taken a lot of snaps at guard in practice, but you said they're kind of moving him around as well. And he has that ability to play tackle. When we had French on the show, he swore up and down like Cunningham's a tackle. And so I was thinking maybe we'll see him at right tackle. But if nothing else, it gives the line some versatility. One guy you didn't mention yet was Brody Meadows. And last year he was battling a little bit for that right guard spot. I think his body type is suited for tackle as well. How is he fitting in? Has he stepped up at all? Is he kind of getting some snaps all over the place?
Yeah, I like Brody. Brody's been good through spring as well. It's just he's rotating, I think, mostly at guard. I really haven't seen him at tackle. But most of the time when the offensive line's doing their positional work, it's on the far side of the field or on the indoor. So, and then when they're on the indoor, it's only like 3-man line set. So it's really hard to tell because Friday we're going to see a lot more live reps and live 11-on-11 sets. So then we'll really get a clearer picture, hopefully, of – what's going to get rolled out there. But I mean, Brody towards the end of the season, I mean, I think his PFF grade showed it, but also you cut on the tape, the eye in the sky didn't lie. He really had some good games there to end. And I think that was the biggest thing last year is you only had that one swing guy. It was Brody stepping in really whoever, like if Braylon went down and needed a series out or Schick went down or whoever. This year you add Montavious, you got Lathe and Johnny Garrett with another year. I mean, you hate to just say playable depth, but if anything, you feel way more comfortable with any of those guys stepping up. Because last year, I mean, the line play was struggling in the beginning, but I don't even know if you could fathom if one of those guys went down, one of the starters last year.
That's fair. And I think last year when they were going through spring, Johnny Garrett, a guy you mentioned, was kind of earmarked and tabbed as like, okay, this guy might be something. And Lathe Ganim, of course, with the recruiting ranking coming in, we're hoping for big things from him. Do you expect those guys to play and play a lot this year?
I expect it. I mean, I honestly think they can make an impact on this line. Last year, you saw Lathe at the end of games doing pancakes, finishing blocks all the way to the ground, and it gets people excited. But I think you'll honestly see some reasonable playing time probably. I mean, they all both already used their red shirt, so, I mean, there's no cap on that now. But I think definitely you got to get those guys experience. I mean, you can only learn so much from the sideline and then practice. You got to get them out there in ACC games and in the mix. So, I mean, that was the whole thing. Just hopefully you get big leads so you can throw them out there. But, I mean, if they have to step up in big situations, I think they're poised to do that as well.
Should be noted that last year in the spring game, Brody Meadows was one of the standouts. He really had a nice spring game. And so – I'm wondering which offensive lineman is going to be that this year. And I have to, obligatory question, last question about the offensive line. How has Gunnar Givens been adjusting to his change in position? Have you seen him out there? I know you're not always, you know, right up on the offensive line, but let me know what you got over there.
No, we've seen him, and I don't know. The writing's been on the wall for that, and I think a lot of Hokies fans, even when he came out of high school, I think the writing was on the wall that he was going to be an O-line guy. And now it's just a matter of fact, you're a little behind the eight ball, you know? It's just, and that's nothing against Gunnar, the coaching staff, or anyone. It's just when you make that positional change, you got to add weight, and it's changing things. And he really didn't do himself any favors last year with the wrist injury, so that was another setback. But, like, he's a talented kid. He's an athlete. I think he'll figure it out. And where does he fit in the two deep? And where, I don't know yet. But
playable depth.
Exactly. We'll see. I mean, he's a good body. He's got good footwork, I think. So, I mean,
that's one of the reasons that people thought he would be an offensive lineman. And, mm-hmm. and the trouble is, after the switchover, like, it's a hard technical position to learn.
That. Yeah.
And so, anyway, let's move to tight end quickly before we talk about wide receiver, which I think a lot of people want to hear about. Gallo's not in the spring. Gosnell's not playing for spring right now either, right? He's out with
injury. He's out there at practice. Benji's one of the coolest guys ever, but he's out there at practice just watching. But no, he's still sidelined with his cleanup knee surgery.
Okay. And then I think it's Harrison St. Germain and Zeke Wimbush, the two younger guys. They've been making some waves up in here.
Yeah. Last practice specifically, they were running some tight end sets, and I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, Harrison St. Germain, I mean, obviously people saw in the Military Bowl last year, didn't see much of him because two tight end sets last year were mostly dominated by Daquan Wright and Benji. But, I mean, Harrison St. Germain found some time out there. But in the Military Bowl, scored a touchdown against Tulane.
Yep.
And then this spring, I mean, he's essentially tight end one right now. So he's getting so many valuable reps, catching passes from Kyron. I mean, and he's using it. Like, every drill you see, it's like, man, take notice. You got Stu Holt, his positional coach, and like cheering him on. Like, it was a great practice from him. And then Zeke, I mean, just an athlete, quarterback in high school.
I was going to say, that kid is really athletic. Like,
really athletic kid. He's big. Like, he's maybe not the tallest, but he's big. Like, he's just, I'd say, he's just an elite athlete. Like, they can really do something special. When you run sets with him, and I mean, Benji's such a good player too. Like, don't overlook him with his injury, but these guys, it's like, for not really recruiting a tight end in a couple of the classes, they've kind of developed these guys. And now, granted, it's not live reps, and we'll see what really happens when the pads and they start smashing here against each other in the spring game. But I've been very pleasantly surprised. I think the coaching staff has to be with what HSG and Zeke have done so far.
It doesn't hurt either that you have this bevy of wide receivers drawing coverage, and that will keep heat off of those tight ends. And so let's talk about those guys, because they've been killing it, according to you, according to other things that I've read, whether it's Ali or some of the younger guys. Is that the sentiment around Merriman, that this position is just like taking it to the next level?
I don't know how, if you ask any coach, how they can tell you with the most straight face, like, praise it, like, how incredible this wide receiver room is. I mean, people saw what Quan and Jay Lane and Ali before he got hurt last year, but I mean, the guys they have behind them would be starting at like other high like Aiden Green he had a great spring last year as a true freshman. This year, I mean, even more. Chancellor Fitzgerald, the guy who redshirted last year, didn't really play at all. Great spring as well. Tekai Heath, the guy who went on his first play as a college player, broke his arm. He's having a great spring. XTB, you saw him on a couple end of rounds last year. Dynamic touchdowns, like a dynamic, shifty player. And then you go out and get two of the best
Keelan and Chance, right?
Yeah, the two best wide receivers in Virginia. I mean, maybe even the best player. I don't know. Keelan, like, those guys are insane. Like, Chance is a true freshman, you're telling me? He's massive. And then Brody is so technical. I mean, last practice Brody had was – I mean, you would have thought he was Jay Lane out there. I mean, doing the exact same thing. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, these guys, it's really – I mean, it's a testament to what Fontel Mines has done in this group. And, like, there's not enough positive things you can say, because I don't know how some of these guys are going to fight their way onto the field, because – like, we get so used
to it. Good problem to have, right? Like, we aren't used to this problem. I remember Fuente came in, he was like, I wanted to get to 8 or 9, and like, we got to like 3 at any given point that we could rely on. And now you take into account some of those like highly touted freshmen, we are up to a pretty significant number.
Yeah.
And we are going to lose a bunch of guys after 2024. And mm-hmm. so these guys will, they see that as well, and they can learn from some all ACC caliber receivers and then ascend. And I hope that's the case. I hope that they don't leave or try to jump after spring or something. But like Pry has mentioned it, multiple coaches, whenever they do an interview, like the wide receiver room comes up. And so you know it must be damn good if all these coaches are bringing it up. So that's awesome to hear. And we appreciate that knowledge. But let's move over to defense. And Sam's going to ask you a couple questions on the defense.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, I'm much more interested in the defensive side of the ball this spring than I am offensive. I think we know a lot about the offense with so many returning guys. Defensively, they're completely overhauling that defensive tackle room. Peebles and Copeland came in. You know, we got some new recruits there that could find their way into the linebacking core, some transfers. What have you seen from Peebles and Copeland specifically? Because I think those two guys are slotted in to be at least the starting two or two of the top three in that defensive tackle rotation.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Peebles, you cut on the tape. I mean, it speaks for itself. He's one of those – he's like a little – I mean, he's a hammer. He's shorter, like the – you mentioned the high school recruit, Emmett Laws, like maybe a smaller defensive tackle height-wise, but, I mean, they bull rush, and they he causes pressure. Like, the way he uses leverage, he's elite. And you saw it at Duke. He didn't start on Duke last year defensive tackle. He was third-team All-ACC. I mean, you just don't see that for a guy who doesn't.
Reminds me of Feldarius Payne, right? In terms of the production he was able to do from a non-starting spot, especially as the year went on.
If Feldarius didn't get dinged up last year, it's like, man, that guy could have – like, he had a special season, and he was a little dinged up here and there. But, yeah, Peebles has looked every bit of the part stepping up, as you would expect a seasoned veteran. Now, Copeland, maybe there were a couple question marks, JUCO guy, journeyman. But, I mean, he's a workhorse, and he's about his business. And, like I said earlier, like, this locker room, this vibe, it's like there's really no lollygag. It's like everyone is very serious about their business, and when they're there, it's like he's gone out there and really impressed. They all do things a little bit differently, but he's so quick. Like everyone wants to look at the numbers of like 20 miles an hour on the treadmill or whatever, but he's quick off the line, and he doesn't get tired. His endurance, like he's not a guy who's going to have to get subbed off the field. Like that's something you look at so often. I mean, he can stay out there for a full series. Like, it's early in spring, but man, like he's come to play. And you didn't mention Gilliam, but I think he'll definitely work his way in there too with Panay. So,
well, Copeland is like the workout warrior, right? So I wouldn't expect him to be getting tired. He's throwing up those weights, and like he's got the YouTube channel with all the workouts. Like it makes sense. He's got some endurance.
Yeah, and you need four guys at defensive tackle minimum. And so the fact that Tech has four guys that are older and experienced, I think is huge. It is absolutely huge. And if they can stay healthy, it can be one of the better units on the defense.
For sure. And then I forgot, because you were just talking about the transfers, but you still have Fuga. I mean, a team captain a year ago, like the heart and soul of this team still coming back. So, I mean, that's a guy who got a lot of snaps last year. I mean, maybe there's a question mark with the defensive line with Narelle and Mario leaving, but I think you can rest pretty assured in that positional group on defense that it'll be replenished and you won't really see a difference.
From a pass rushing side, Brent Pry, his defensive philosophy, he doesn't blitz a lot. He likes to get pressure with the edge rushers. We saw APR do a really good job last year. Could not get to 10 sacks. Stuck at 9.5 for a while. But, you know, we got Cole Nelson, Keyshawn Burgos, CJ McCray, McDonald. How do we feel about the depth and then kind of the star power up there with it, probably going to guess APR and then Burgos and Nelson kind of fighting for that second DN spot?
Man, I am so high on Burgos and both Cole Nelson this year. I mean, obviously APR, I predicted him to lead the ACC in sacks last year. Everyone looked at me like I was crazy. And then he went out and should have had 10 if Feldarius, I think it was Feldarius who touched Calandria on that last play
right there.
but either way, man, but Burgos, I mean, a workout warrior in the winter fit like in hunger drills, like he does it all. And then you see Cole Nelson, I mean, what was the fake punt last year people saw, like but I mean, still Cole Nelson, I mean, those are two guys playing across from APR who are game wreckers. And then behind them, you mentioned McDonald, he's having both him and his brother both having good springs as well. So, I mean, but Burgos and Nelson, two guys I like running mates with APR very high on.
I was going to say about Nelson, he's been more like he's been steady, but he is was known for being better in the run than he was against the pass. But we've seen him come along as of late. And do you think he's got a lock on that starting spot across from APR?
You know, you like you want to give it to the incumbent, the older guy, but I mean, Burgos brings something so special too. I mean,
that's what I've been thinking is that Burgos passing him for the starting nod.
He's a physical specimen, but like like you know, we put so much stock in starting, but both of these guys are going to get a bunch of snaps a game. Like they're going to come in and out, and one guy might have two sacks or two pressures a game, and the next guy might have four the next, and they'll switch. But I mean. I think the battle between the and how they complement each other is, but man, I could see both of them probably splitting 6-6 game starting or 4-8 or whoever has the better week. But yeah, I really love that position playing against like on the other side from.
I just can't believe this depth across the D line. Now that we've talked about both positions, like I cannot remember. You know, we were talking about getting off the bus and how we look. I can't remember the D line looking like this since maybe we had, you know. Luther and Daddy and all those guys in 2012 when we thought like, oh, this is going to be really gnarly or whatever the year it was. This is exciting because this is not just starters. There's legitimate depth here despite losing three defensive tackles because we went out in the portal and attacked the trenches. And so that has me super excited. Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah.
We'll move back to the linebackers and there's a lot going on with the linebackers this offseason. Some good, some bad. Bring in Sam Brumfield. And first off, dude looks – talk about looking the part. He looks terrifying. Great smile. I'm sure he's a great person, but he looks terrifying out there. I watched some of his YouTube cut-ups a couple days ago, and I don't know how that guy was at Middle Tennessee. No disrespect to the Blue Raiders, but – I have no idea how that guy wasn't playing major, major college football.
And wasn't he not even starting at the beginning of the year?
No, he was like rotational for basically his whole career. Was like rotating with, I forget the other guy's name. And then all of a sudden, just a light switch. I don't know, but he looks the part. You have him. I feel like you feel pretty good about him. Sitting in the mic position. If you go out and get an older guy in the transfer portal, like he's your mic. Kiata Jenkins a little banged up, but he's gonna be out there. He was one of the most important pieces of the Virginia Tech defense. I think there are some advanced stats where Tech was almost double as good of a defense when he was out there playing than when he wasn't. And then you kind of have everyone else, and there's some young talent with Caleb Woodson and Gabe Williams, a true freshman who's coming in. But Kelly Lawson is still here and still developing into his freakishly lanky body. And you got other guys as well. Like, what's the linebacker room looking like past the mic position, which we know is probably Sam Brumfield?
Yeah, I mean, you threw a lot at me. I'll try and touch on it all. But, I mean, first, you mentioned Sam Brumfield. We talked to him last week. He's going to be a fan favorite. Awesome guy. I mean, just such a down-to-earth cool guy. And you mentioned Middle Tennessee. I mean, they played Alabama and Missouri last year. You cut on the film. I mean, that he's playing at SEC caliber. I mean, incredible player. And he started at JUCO down in Mississippi. I mean, an incredible player. You mentioned his physical specimen, his instincts. It's so early. They haven't even really started like live, but still. I mean, I think they filled that mic question mark last year where it was just a revolving door. Tizzy had to step up there. Tisdale was never really a true mic, but I mean, he did a great job last year having to fill that role because there really wasn't anyone that could have. But I mean, Sam Brumfield, he's a true mic. Chris Marv's got his guy. He's going to put his fingerprints all over that. Then you shift over to Star and Keonta Jenkins. I mean, you hate to see it, kind of like Strowman back at safety, dealing with a little injury sideline in spring. You know, he's got all the experience. You're not really worried about him getting these spring reps. Provides a great opportunity for Gabe Williams this spring to really make some big strides running with the ones or even the twos. I mean, those reps are really important. You got Brody Jones, the redshirt freshman, also working at Star with him. That's going to have to shake out who's behind Keonta. He's not going to play all those snaps. And then you said the rest of the guys, is Caleb Woodson going to be Will or Mike? I mean, he was a star last year, but is he going to be at Will or Mike? Kelly Lawson dealing with a wrist injury. He's out this spring. I mean, he's a freak, but not being able to lift, not being able to practice, it's hard to fill out that frame even more when you're sidelined. And then you got McDonald. I mean, McDonald towards the end of last year played out of his mind there at Will. So, I mean, I'm really high on Caleb Woodson, and he's had – like even last spring he was doing things that was like, whoa, did he just hit that pad? And you heard that pop from across the way? And it was like he was doing things like that. So, I mean, this spring he's brought it too. So I think he's got a very, very high prospect.
He showed out. I think he's one of the guys where – you know, he's going to be an in-the-mix guy this spring. He's going to be an in-the-mix guy in August. When Tech plays Vanderbilt, he's going to hit somebody. I'm telling you. Like,
you're talking about Caleb Woodson?
Yeah.
Caleb Woodson, yeah. He's going to hit somebody. He's going to make a play. I'm excited about him. And like you said, I think they got the starter at the star done. They got the mic. The Will is the one up in the question, but a good problem to have is that they have a lot of young talent there.
Can I raise one concern here? Just we've heard false flags on the mic position the last couple of years with Jaden Keller, a little bit with Kelly as well, different position potentially. But do you think, Colby, that Sam Brumfield can be an ACC linebacker week in and week out? Because that's the question coming up from was it CUSA? I'm not sure which division that Middle Tennessee's in anymore. But
well, also he's got to do it every snap all year. Like, right. I think he's one of those players who just doesn't come out the game.
Yeah,
and that's a totally fair point, especially with last year and everything. Like the Mike, Jaden Keller were supposed to be this lifting. For two, that
I mean,
role.
Even under the Fuentes staff,
going years back for sure. Like you said, but I mean. Like, but they really didn't have that true guy. Like Jaden Keller was switching from Will, you know, Kelly Lawson was like adjusted Wills when they like Ason Stevens.
Oh yeah.
Was
didn't real Keller life. Like play safety in high school or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Like all these guys weren't true linebackers, and like, I don't not trying to dip down to the 25 class, but you got Clatterball coming in. Like he plays linebacker in high school. Now, will he continue to fill out? But I mean, there for a time you were drafting safeties and then turning them into linebackers, which is great. But I mean, those are just instincts that you don't have stepping in. And Brumfield, I mean, I go back to that Alabama and Missouri game. I mean, that's a small sample size, two games last year. But, I mean, it's two – I mean, they won the Cotton Bowl and one team went
to the
Rose Bowl.
They were very good SEC teams. This wasn't exactly. Vanderbilt, you know.
and he played out of his mind. Like, you hear coaches say it, I'll say the eye in the sky doesn't lie. Like, he played out of his mind. And he had a great season last year. So, but, I mean, at the same time, usage rate, will it be the same? Because, like Sam kind of said, like he's going to be a guy who's really going to have to play pretty much every snap on the field and be a leader on this defense.
I'll tell you
have
what
we seen
feel,
any
I'm sorry go, ahead,
go on real quick have we seen any Ason Stevens this spring? He was a relatively high profile recruit out of Indianapolis, a place Tech doesn't get a lot of recruits.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a solid spring there. His frame's looking good, continually building his frame, like big guy building in that micro role. So it'll be interesting to see under the tutelage of Sam, because he's older guy. But I mean, I'm very high on Ason. He's got the physical profile. Same with George Balance. I think George Balance was working there at Mike too. The
another George Balance reference, man. I've been hearing his name all across the podcast universe.
Well, I mean that's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing with Mike. You know, Mike linebacker. He didn't really recruit a true linebacker. So you're having to talk about. I mean, a walk on kid last year, the Marshall game. They were so. I don't want to say fed up, but it got to a point where they're like, get George in there. Like, we got to have something. So, I mean, it's interesting. I think they've all had good springs, and like they put in the work this winter to really get physically right.
That's very good to hear. And I think what makes me feel better about Brumfield being a power conference linebacker going forward, one, it's another year of development, but two, Pry and Marv and whoever else, you know, we've got a DB on staff. They went out and they found this linebacker. And there's like Marv was a linebacker, Price specialties was linebackers. Like that makes me feel better that they went out, they got Brumfield to be
it was
our
their guy. They got their guy.
Exactly. And so that's what makes me feel good. And I think we're going to close out with some DB stuff, Sam.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, cornerbacks, we feel pretty good about that with Delane and Strong. We don't need to talk about those guys too much, but, you know, behind them, you know, Lovett looked pretty good last year. And then the safeties, I would say that was maybe the most revolving door, question mark, big issue on the team last year was they just couldn't get any consistency at safety. They were constantly out of position. It was an issue. It was an issue from game one to the bowl game. How are we feeling about Stroman's nursing the shoulder? What about the other guys? Because you did lose Nasir Peoples, and he was, I guess, the guy that they needed to be healthy last year.
Yeah, I mean, like, we'll get into this, but, you know, like, I just kind of had the epiphany. Like, last year, the Military Bowl, who were the two starting safeties? It was Mose and Jalen Jones, because both Nasir and...
Yeah, you're right, because Stroman were held out of the game. He was hurt, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, now that game... A lot of things went right. A lot of things were happening up front to make it easy on those guys.
Tulane didn't have a quarterback.
I agreed. I'm still, to play a full bowl game for both those guys, I think you can't undersell that. And Nasir Peoples really held it down back there. But with him gone, and I mean, Stroman, I feel confident. Like, missing spring sucks, but he's a guy who knows what he needs to do. I mean, the targeting last year kind of became a running joke. But, I mean, we'll see how that carries in. I know they're working on that, and there's only so much you can control with that. But, I mean, between Mose and Jalen Jones, who were the guys we saw a lot back there, other than, like, pulling Mansoor back and doing other things like that with other guys, and we'll see if they do that with Strong to try and boost his draft stock to show he can play around. But right now, Mose Phillips, like, the young, heavy hitter, pad crusher guy, Jalen Jones, a converted wide receiver who has all the athleticism in the world, but instincts and open field tackling maybe a little questionable. And Stroman said before he feels comfortable playing either on the boundary or to the field. So honestly, whichever one of those guys kind of establishes themselves as the guy, I think will take that role. And I think a lot of us in the media kind of penciled in Mose as that guy to take it. And then whenever Pry had his introductory spring press conference, he made a couple references on, man, Jalen Jones. So like, I know there was a couple lapses last year on big open field of runs and reads on filling gaps, but he switched positions last spring from wide receiver. Mm-hmm. It's a tough jump, and I'm pretty high on him. But and there's guys behind him like Christian Williams, Thomas Williams. They've even mentioned Braylon Johnson back there. So, I mean, there's things that can flip back there. But really, I'd say Mose Phillips and Jalen Jones at that other position.
Yeah, and – at some point or another, we have to stop caveating Jalen Jones with he just moved over. We're getting close to a year. No, I'm not.
Only half 4 years of eligibility,
right? Like he's over there. So let's see it, right? And it's for me, that's a position where I love Mose Phillips' potential. Stroman's injury history and targeting history make me a little concerned. Yeah. Like, is that a spot? Would the coaching staff go out and get a safety after spring? That's something I talked about on our last show. Like,
definitely to keep your eyes on. Definitely to keep your eyes on as we enter the spring portal window. I mean,
I also like Reddish's potential as well. Just to say that.
How did I forget Quentin Reddish? I mean, you want to talk about true freshman? He's probably the true freshman or early enrollee who's had the best. I mean, I don't know how I forgot to mention it. Probably the best spring of any early enrollee. Great. That kid. Well, I mean, but like at the same time, you can't put too much stock in that. This kid, he should still be in his senior year of high school. So it's like, we put all, like Jeremiah Coney last year, we put all these lofty expectations on him. I mean, it's great that he's here and doing what he's doing, but a lot has to translate and getting adjusted. But man, if he hasn't done as good or about as good as he could have this spring, he's come ready to go, and it's real deal.
That's the reason that so many people were pushing for his commitment as we were getting closer to signing day and whatnot. Sam, can I ask the nickel question here? Because we did say we're good on the outside, but do we know who's going to be playing that nickel corner spot? Because Canteen's gone, and I feel like Dorian Strong has the body type, and I think Pry even mentioned him getting in there a little bit. Do you think he would be the guy if we're going with the nickel corner?
I think Dorian might start on the inside. I mean, because now in this day's college football, you see a lot of the best receivers play there on the inside. And that's what the NFL got. Like, you go out, you receive NFL feedback. And I mean, the slot's
a huge priority.
And they say, look, we want to see this guy play on the – we know he can lock down on the outside. Let's see him play on the inside. Kind of like what Chamari did his last year. I mean, Chamari was a Swiss Army nickel. I mean, he did it all. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Dorian play on that inside with Mansoor and either Dante Lovett or a Braylon Johnson out on the boundary. And I think you have extreme confidence in all of those guys.
Nice. Let's do just a quick special teams thing here before we – have a recruiting question and then plug what you got going on over there at 247. But do you think Tootin's going to return kicks again this year? Because he ended up being such a weapon for us. But sometimes you have to balance the risk and reward of having him out there doing that because he's so valuable to us on offense. But do you think he's going to be returning kicks again?
I think it'll be him, Malachi Thomas, just like we saw last year. Or maybe they throw Tyler Mason back there, the true freshman kid. Maybe a Jeremiah Coney. I don't. Tyler Mason's another early enrollee who's had a good spring, but I don't see how you can't. I mean, what was he? It was like his metrics were like top six, top five, something in the country. Dude, and
he was
real. Exactly. So I mean, and Stu Holt. Like I even asked him. I was like, what do you like about running backs taking kickoff returns? Is their vision seeing the lanes? And he mentioned that he likes having running backs back there, which I mean, it's paid off for him as we've seen. So I think he'll be back there on kick return duty.
And on punt return, is it going to be Holloway or Lane, or are they going to kind of do a split?
It might be a little split like it was last year. Jay Lane, towards the end, got a little dinged up, and it kind of was a thing where it's like, look, we need you on third down and second down and all these plays, so we're not going to roll you back there for punt return. So Tuck kind of got the – I mean, Tucker Holloway in his 2 years doing it has been incredible.
He's very good.
I mean – both of those guys, I mean, but you cut on Jay Lane's tape back from Middle Tennessee, he was doing the same, like, incredible stuff. So, I don't know. I think both of those guys, but probably Tucker Holloway to start the year.
How are the kickers looking?
Yeah, so they were running, what, special team sets last practice to open, and I think John Love went 5 of 5 from left hash, right hash, 45, 50. It was hard to tell from where we were, but he was automatic when I looked up. So, I mean – everyone saw his improvement last year. I don't think he missed an extra point on like one or two field goals, yeah. Like 90% on field goals.
He's a good kicker, man. You
can't put enough stock in that. Like when you need three, when you need an extra point, it's nice to know you roll out a guy and he's pretty much automatic from about 50 in. And then Peter Moore, you know, a punter who you have pretty great faith in, captain of the team. And even John Lowe on kickoffs. How many touchbacks did he have last year?
He had a ton for sure. So recruiting wise, and we're not going to hammer you too much on recruiting because there's so many names and you could go on and on about guys that might never play in the maroon and orange, but so many guys have been on campus as of late. Jamari Deloach, Deuce Edwards, among many, many others. Anything exciting on the 2025 recruiting front that our listeners should be aware of? Like, do you think it'll really heat up in June? Is there any positions that you think we're going hard after right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly June is going to heat up like a pressure cooker. And then by July, I think June, July, it's going to be a big window after these officials, during these officials. I know Jamari, just talked to him. He's coming, I think, June 7th. And he said he wants to decide by July. You got Malik Washington. You got a whole host of guys. But, I mean, there's so – like you would talk about positions – just in the state of Virginia for class of 2025. I don't know if there's been a deeper – and, like, granted, these kids are young. You don't know. But, I mean, just based on evaluations, secondary, I mean, there's, like, maybe not rated five-star, but five-star, high four-star talent at cornerback and safety coming out of Virginia. And a lot of these guys are really talented, and they'll be here on campus, or they have been on campus here. So I think that's a massive position group. Obviously, Cheetah wants to get as many of those guys on campus. You got a couple guys in the boat at quarterback, Keldon Ryan from Texas. I mean, kid's a gunslinger.
He was just on campus recently, right?
Mm-hmm. He was here a couple weeks ago. I think it was one of the first spring practices. But he was here with Carter Stallard, the two first guys. You see them talking. It was cool seeing them talk and kind of build that chemistry, knowing that maybe one day he'll be blocking for him up there. Yeah, that's so cool. That was pretty sweet to see. But, yeah, I mean, really high on those kids who are already in the boat. And then got Jaden Anderson and Knowledge Harrell, both from Green Run High School, a great wide receiver, like we mentioned, cornerback duo. And then a couple of those prospective guys, there's, I mean, Jamari Deloach.
Do you think that we're making strides in terms of getting towards the higher echelon of talent? Because that's one – Pry came in and he said that we were behind on so many of the in-state kids from the last staff. And now we're seeing in year three, like you said, this swell of in-state kids, high-level in-state kids coming to visit, scheduling OVs, that kind of thing. Do you think that that's – are you seeing that in in your line of work that we are making those strides with the 4 stars, with the higher end 3 stars.
Certainly. And, you know, like, put a lot of stock in these rankings, but they change a lot. I mean, like,
they do.
I'm looking at it right now. A kid like Jeff Overton is ranked as a 22nd player in Virginia. And, like, there's just no way. Like, that kid is every bit of a high 4-star. And it's like, maybe he doesn't show up there, but it's like, there's kid. And then people get mad when they log in and they see all the they're like, Clemson's eating our lunch in state, taking a couple guys. But just because Clemson's taking those guys doesn't mean they're exactly on our board or someone else's board. So it varies. And there's really not a guy in Virginia. The biggest thing with Pry is that we want to know these kids and we want to have relationships. Like, they want to be at the table. And at every single one of these guys, they're at the table, if not top of the board in some regard. So they're doing all the right things. And the state is, I mean, he's doing everything he's set out to stay with the footprint, especially within the state. I think he's doing all the right things.
I mean, it's hard to deny when you see 4 out of the 5 commits for 2025 are from Virginia. So we're definitely hitting the footprint hard. I guess that's just about all we have for spring practice questions. Sam, do you have anything else before we kind of – we can let Colby off the hook unless he wants to stick around for basketball too.
I'll just ask him real quick. If you had to sum up the vibes of practice right now, how are the vibes?
Competitive, focused, driven, but also light. You know, like,
is there a brotherhood feeling to it all?
Yeah. I mean, Pry's going around joking with guys, but it's not like lollygagging it. It's giving him a hard time for doing something wrong because he knows he'll get it right. You know, it's a very cohesive, you know, like, you see the guys joking around, but also very disciplined and focused at the task at hand, but they're enjoying it while they do it. And everyone's holding the man next to them accountable. I mean, and like I said, I've only been out there for 2 years of spring practice, but I mean, even just compared from a year ago, you can just feel it in the air. It's like everything's crisper, sharper, but at the same time, it feels more lighter than it did last year. Like I mean, 7-6 isn't where they want to be, but it feels like they know they can get this thing in the right direction.
I think just knowing roles, right, can really help with some of that. Like, oh, I know that this guy does this well. I know who the starting quarterback's going to be. Like, things like that.
Like, Drone's even going into Marshall. It's like, he's like, I'm that guy. I am that dude now. He's like, he knows he can go out there. Because last year in spring, Drones would look like the Heisman favorite one day, and the next day he'd look like a lower major starting quarterback, you know? So it's like, it was the highs and lows, and now he's just out there. And it's not that he didn't carry himself with that swagger. It's just, it's expected, and he's doing all the right things, and he's leading not only by example, but vocally, which I think is a big step for him. So I think it's really exciting.
As you move forward and grow in your career, whether you're quarterback or anything else, or just a regular person, and you get that little bit of success and then a little bit of confidence, and it can grow exponentially. And hopefully that's what's happening with our team. We got one from 3 wins. We got 7 wins. Everyone's feeling a little bit better. The vibes are better. The roster's improving. It's a very exciting time to be covering Virginia Tech sports, but I just can't wait for next season, man. I am so pumped. Colby, where can people find you, read your stuff, etc.?
Yeah, check me out on vtscoop.com, message board, articles, videos.
You're starting to put out some more videos too, yeah.
Yeah, I'm digging that. Yeah, I mean, I'll post all those on my Twitter at Colby_Crawford, but they get posted on vtscoop.com. We got a lot of good stuff going on over there. And I don't know, just trying to produce fun content, behind-the-scenes looks at practice, trying to interview players, not only in football, basketball, every sport at Virginia Tech, just trying to get that out there. And I'm having a great time doing it. Got good people with Evan and everyone over there looking Heck out yeah. for me. So it's been really cool.
Dude, that's great. You're grinding. You're on it. This is the time of year. It's fun. You know, the spring game's awesome because we can't lose. And so I'm excited to be down there next weekend, and hopefully we'll get a chance to link up at some point, but who knows, dude. But thank you so much for being here, because that was a lot of great insight on all the stuff going on with spring practice. And now I feel like I got a little bit more knowledge heading into that spring game. I think we'll let you go just because we're going to do our beer break. We're going to do basketball quickly because we're already over an hour. But again, Colby, thank you so much for being here.
Cool. For sure. Appreciate you guys again.
All right. Later,
thanks, Colby.
See ya.
Okay, let's take a second. Kobe was awesome, first and foremost.
Great.
Really good stuff from him. Let's take a second, talk about our sponsor, do a beer break, and then get to the women's basketball news. The 2D Pokies Under the Influence podcast is brought to you by Roback. Roback is the performance activewear designed for those who crave activity. The Commonwealth is back. It's in stock. You can pick it up before April 13th. Before you got to look good at the spring game, you can get yourself that Virginia Tech polo. It's the lightest fabric. It's stretchy. And you can get 20% off using code 2DEEPVT. So go to roback.com, load up your cart. You can, why don't you pick up a quarter zip? Because they got the Berg as well. They got shorts, joggers, all kinds of good stuff over there. Their hoodies are so comfortable. I've got a couple upstairs.
Best and women's stuff as well.
Yeah, dude, the hoodie is fantastic. And so go to roback.com, load up your cart, use code 2DEEPVT, all one word, for 20% off your order. Roback, crave activity. Sam, I posted this on our Twitter. It was the Hazy Hearted IPA. Everyone's familiar with the Two Hearted. It's one of the older craft beers, one of the better craft beers that has existed for a very long time, right up there with the 60 Minute and Sam Adams and whatever. But the Two Hearted, I had it on tap or in bottle at my wedding. And that's the line from our intro where Robbie's like, we're going to put this old guy in a grave, because the old guy came up to Robbie, is this older gentleman at my wedding. I don't even know who it was. Robbie was telling me a story and he's like, man, these things are really good. And they're 7%. And if you're above 60, 65 years old, a couple of those might put you on your rear end. So that's where that line comes from the Two Hearted. This is their like New England edition of Bell's Two Hearted IPA. It's the Hazy Hearted. It's actually stronger than the Two Hearted. It is 7.5%, but it is good. And Bell's does a great job with their Oberon, with their Christmas Ale, with a number of their other beers. They're out of Comstock, right, Sam? I think they're a Michigan brewery. This beer is good. I like it. I'm not saying it's an amazing home run, but I knew that Bell's was going to come correct, and it's a solid beer.
Nice. Well, I, as I said, I'm on water, but we're cleaning things up this week, and then we'll get back after it next time. But it was in Breckenridge, Colorado, and in Colorado, I think known mostly for Coors Light. We did crush a bunch of those, but went to Broken Compass Brewery in Breckenridge, and really solid stuff. They're known for their Mangy Moose, which is like a fruity IPA classic, really good. But I'll tell you the one that stuck out to me, and if you can find it at a specialty beer store, go get it. It was the Coconut Porter. And I'm not a big porter fan or a stout fan. It's just a little too much for me. But this was only a 5.5% alcohol level porter. Excuse me. Can't say that word.
Transfer portal?
Yeah, that's what's ruining it for me. I got to tell you, first off,
name for a beer, the Transfer Porter.
Trademark that real quick. This is the best porter I've ever had. I gave it a 4.75 on Untappd.
Oh, dang.
It was the smoothest. It's what you want a porter to
This was from
like
Compass Brewing, you said?
Broken Compass.
Broken Compass.
The Coconut Porter. And I had a few people who were with me tried it, and they kind of agreed. Like, we've never tried a porter that tastes like it actually says it's going to taste. It was chocolatey. It was coconutty. It was smooth.
Are you a coconut person in general? Like, will you eat an Almond Joy?
Ooh, I'm not a big candy bar fan, but okay. I'll crush a coconut cream pie.
Okay.
And a coconut cake. Yeah. I had to shout that out. The best porter I've ever had. The Coconut Porter from Broken Compass Brewing in Breckenridge, Colorado.
I'm going to Crested Butte this summer for a wedding. So I'll have to see if there's any Broken Compass close to where I'm at. And I have no idea how close Crested Butte is to Breckenridge, but you sent me a picture or two from your trip in the brew houses. And I was jealous. It looked like a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to women's basketball. I said Kenny Brooks left to take the Kentucky job. You'd have to know that if you're a Virginia Tech fan or just a college basketball fan in general. He got more money, but not so much more. And so this is something me and Mike McDaniel talked a little bit about, like the facilities, the NIL, a conference on solid footing, and just a next step for him and his family, I think is probably what this came down to more so than the money. Don't get me wrong. It is more money. than his
more money.
But we were going to raise the amount that we were paying him anyway, I would assume.
Yeah. I mean, the vibe that I generally got from his comments that he's made is he was looking for a new challenge and he felt like he succeeded at Virginia Tech.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah. Good on you. I mean, that's what he came here to do. He did it. I think his role at Virginia Tech was very similar to Buzz Williams, where it was to revitalize the program.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think anybody was thinking Final Four and ACC championship and ACC regular season championship. And I don't think people were thinking that. But this is the world of college coaching. These guys want to move on and conquer new challenges.
Yep.
And I think if the season didn't end how it did on the court with the injuries and the, you know, losing, well, it ended up being like losing four out of your last five, something like that, I think we would have looked at it differently. But I've said it, I tweeted it out, I've said it in group chats. I've never seen a collegiate athletic program implode like the Tech women's basketball program did without a scandal.
The circumstances are just brutal, man.
A 3-week stretch like that ever. But in good news, it looks like we have a coach, a very well-respected one, one who has coached for 6 years and gone to 6 postseason tournaments. That is batting 1,000.
Well, yes. So she didn't coach during COVID. Well, she didn't go to one during COVID, but that's not her fault. There was no NCAA tournament that year, but she would have made it at Marquette. This is Megan Duffy, mm-hmm. we're talking about. She played for Notre Dame, was a great player. She actually won the Naismith Award for the shorter player. Do you have ever heard of this? The Francis Pomeroy Award? They don't do it anymore. So
I can imagine why.
It's kind of like a weird award, right? But like Jameer Nelson won it for the men. Mulkey won it for the women back in the day in 1984. But it's basically for any woman under 5'8", you are eligible for this short Naismith. And Megan Duffy won it back in 2006, I believe. But she's 110-46 in her 5 years at Marquette, 64-30. In the Big East, which is a .681 winning percentage, 3 tournament appearances in 5 years. And keep in mind, one of those years, she wasn't allowed to go and she would have. So it's really 4 out of 5. She was at Miami, Ohio before Marquette, assistant at Michigan, at GW, at St. John's. And we actually beat her and Marquette in the 2021 tournament in the first round. She hasn't won any of those first round tournament games, but she's been getting Marquette to the tournament pretty consistently. It's a good hire in my book. I mean, the winning percentage alone is great, and the Big East is a pretty stout conference.
Yeah, and it seems like she was recruiting pretty well too. I believe they had their highest profile recruit enter the portal today, so that is a potentially good sign for Virginia Tech. I'm not going to claim to know her X's and O's or anything like that, but it seems like they made a bit of a splash hire on an up-and-coming coach. And that's probably what they needed to do. So good on Whit Babcock. He's really good at hiring coaches. So this seems like another W for Whit Babcock.
Yeah, I mean, it's on paper, it looks good. Lindsay Edmonds had been a name that was mentioned. I think Molly Miller got briefly mentioned. Even Kelly Harper from Tennessee, who was recently let go, she was mentioned. But I think that Megan Duffy is a better candidate than all of those women I just named, among others. And so I was ecstatic when I saw the news come down. I think it's terrific. And just to finish the thought on Kenny Brooks, the way our season ended and Liz going down and not being able to complete a tournament the way it should have been completed, it was very much a period on the end of his VT sentence. And it's probably a lot sexier in his mind to go to a place like Kentucky and kind of get a fresh start instead of having to like completely rebuild Virginia Tech from the ground up. And I know you'd have Strack and you might have Georgia Amore for an extra year, but losing Kitley and coming down from that Final Four, like you said, I think it was he had done what he had came here to do. And it was the period on the end of the sentence and he moves on. Well, after he moved on, Georgia Amore jumped in the portal, Clara Strzok jumped in the portal just yesterday. I think Suffren was also in the portal. And it was looking like more were likely to come. We get Megan Duffy today. Wenzel announces she's coming back. Hazelton had reaffirmed her commitment. She's one of the incoming freshmen. So we might have turned the tide here a little bit. And you take into account the girls that Duffy recruited and might be bringing over from Marquette. You can start to see a little bit of a bright future for Virginia Tech again.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think in the world of college sports right now, not just women's basketball, it's when something like this is going to happen. And when it does happen, can you put out the fire? And some programs are not able to put out the fire. Seems like Virginia Tech pretty much did. With Georgia Amore, all-time Hokie, one of my favorite Hokie athletes I've ever watched.
Incredible, yeah.
This, and what people need to understand for her is she can go in the WNBA draft and be a top 10 pick. She is on the Australian national team. This year for her, if she stays in college, is going to be a semi-pro year. Like, she's going to be playing with the Australian national team, and she's working to elevate her game from the college level to the pro level. And Kenny Brooks is basically her personal trainer for that.
Yeah.
So don't think about this as her leaving Virginia Tech. Like, this is her career move. And honestly, it'd probably be dumb for her not to do that move.
Yeah. So well, she does, especially if she gets a lot of money to go to Kentucky, which she very may. But she
very may. And
listen to this.
You're not going to make that WNBA.
I was looking at the WNBA mock drafts today. She was number five in the Athletic mock draft, number five overall in the WNBA draft, higher than Kit Lee and just under the consensus top four picks. Obviously, it's Caitlin Clark, it's Brink, it's Omaros, the girl from South Carolina, the big, and then I can't remember the fourth one, the girl from Tennessee. But like after that is when the questions really start in the draft, and Amore could be in that five spot. It's probably a little high, but she's anywhere from five to nine. That's where she would go if she decides to declare. And that's actually coming up. Isn't the draft like in April 14th or something like that?
It's coming up really soon. I don't know much about the WNBA ins and outs. From what I do understand, though, and this is more towards Liz Kitley, but they aren't going to invest in a player who has any sort of question marks. Like, there's just not enough money in the league to be able to make those mistakes in drafting wise. So something like Liz Kitley's injury, with modern medicine and the way that we can repair ACLs now, it's maybe not as big of a deal, but that's going to knock you down some draft spots just because they don't want to pay you that much if you're coming off a knee surgery. And someone like Georgia Amore, who is a shorter player, played with a three-time big, like, I don't think she has anything to prove, but a WNBA scout might want to see her in a different setting.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that you have to think about. Take off the orange maroon glasses. They have a career to set themselves up.
Well, how about this, Sam? If she's not in a draft with Caitlin Clark, she's probably the number one point guard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that's,
and so
that Caitlin girl's pretty good.
That's why, like, could she go? I mean, I don't think Georgia would go number one overall, but like, I don't know what could happen in next year's draft. I don't know the year she could have at Kentucky, but like, that's what she's weighing right now. It's like, you're going to be behind Clark and Brink and Tennessee and South Carolina. I'm sorry, I can't remember the girls' names, but like, next year, maybe you won't. And so that's something to think about. And I don't know how the money difference is, but that's enough to talk about the WNBA for now. But like, if Georgia decides not to go to the WNBA, it's gonna move Kitley up a spot, so that would be nice.
Yeah,
at least that's what the mocks are saying. Let's move to men's real quick. The portal has been wreaking a little bit of havoc on our team. Last Tuesday, John Camden and Lynn Kidd jumped in. Wednesday, Poteet, Sean Padula, and MJ Collins all jumped in. Twitter kind of went nuts, Hokie Twitter. And then Thursday, we got the final death blow, which was Tyler Nickel also jumped in. And at that point, like, I had been arguing with people on Twitter, like, don't compare Mike Young to Justin Fuente. Like, he's so much of a better coach. He's so much better liked. He won a championship, something Fuente never did, all this kind of stuff. And after Nickel jumped in, I was like, listen, I can't even, I don't know what I'm fighting anymore. I'm just going to like let everything happen and we'll see. I like Mike Young. I'm on the record saying I like Mike Young. I think he's a really good coach. Do I think the strategy and roster build out the last couple of years has been perfect? I do not. But I also don't think that, and Mike kind of said this, you can't complain all year about not having good players and then be mad when all those players jump in the portal. Like,
yeah,
you know, like I like a lot of these guys, but we talked many times about how this roster makeup wasn't perfect and none of these guys were elite. And so, yeah, I wanted Tyler Nickel back. I wanted Sean Padula back, but I'm also not going to throw a hissy fit that these guys are testing their value on the open market.
Yeah. And it's really, really tough to take off the orange and maroon glasses because we know these guys' names and we see the potential and we can't really see the holistic view. And it's like Tyler Nickel, does he have a ton of talent? Yes, obviously he does, but he didn't get a lot of playing time at UNC his first year. He didn't start for Virginia Tech this year and really any, I don't know, he maybe started one or two games. So he's played in the ACC for 2 years. He wasn't a starter either year. How is he magically going to turn into a top tier ACC starter overnight? Like MJ Collins had a good last few 6 or 7 games and played well, but for most part of the season, he couldn't hit a shot. Lynn Kidd couldn't protect the rim all season. Like they're good players and they have good potential. And I would love for them to develop at Virginia Tech, but like at some point these guys run out of eligibility.
What you're saying is some of these guys are replaceable. Like,
yeah,
like,
there's, I would say Hunter Couture is the only player on Tech's roster that is irreplaceable. And honestly, the only other one I'd say is maybe Malajuel Poteet, what he does as a rim protector. Like, and he's other coming than back. That, and he's coming back. Hunter can't come back. I think he's ran out of classes to take. So, other than that, you're like, hey.
And the point about Nickel is fair. He didn't start at UNC and he was a freshman. And then this year, I thought we saw him improve as the year went on. And so your hope is that, hey, I wanted Tyler Nickel back because I thought he had a lot of potential. And he's one of the few guys I was like, I really want this guy back because I like him. Mm-hmm. But your points are also fair. Like he couldn't always be on the floor. And so, you know, if people are willing to pay him, like, go ahead. But like my whole thing is we're talking about, you know, war, right? Like wins above replacement. And so many of these guys with the way our team performed this year, there are guys you can find and plug in where you can get this production out of them. Not all of them. I mean, Padula's production is going to be hard to replace, but we're going to try with Jordan Ivory Curry because he's Ivy, not Ivory. Jordan Ivy Curry, he committed to us yesterday from UTSA. He played in 101 games in his career, started over 37. He was at UTSA, then he was at Pacific, then he went back to UTSA, kind of a weird twist. But 17 points per game last season. He had 2 games over 30. One, he scored 38 on FAU. And keep in mind, FAU had been in the Final Four the previous year. That's not just like a nothing program.
I think they beat Tech by like 45.
Right, they killed us. 33 on SMU, a future ACC member, and 28 on Memphis, a historically good basketball school. So Curry showed an ability to score against top schools. Will he be as good as Sean Padula? I don't know. Maybe he'll turn the ball over less. Sean had like the second most turnovers in the ACC. And so this is what I'm like. We knew none of these players were perfect. If some of them come back, I'll be happy. I'd love to get Tyler Nickel back. I'm so ecstatic to get Malajuel Poteet back. Lynn Kidd already committed to Miami. Tampering much? I mean, he committed to Miami like 2 days after hopping in the portal, but
he's the quintessential Jim Larrañaga big, though.
That's a total.
Like, he might put up numbers at Miami.
Yeah, he could. He very well may. I mean, he put up. Yeah. He had a great season for us. I was so happy to see his improvement. He really played well, but we're gonna bring in guys in the portal. We are going to start to replace some of these guys. And
I mean, what people also need to understand is the number of players in the portal right now for college basketball is astounding. So Tech will be able to fill the numbers. They'll be able to fill the scholarships. They have 2 freshmen coming in who I'm not going to say that they're, you know, elite all-conference freshman players, but they're more playable physically than what we've seen in the past. Jaden Young is a guy who they physically, who they still really like. Yeah, it's going to be okay. They're going to field the team. They're going to be fine. They got to get NIL figured out, which is going to be a work in progress this offseason. Trust me on that one. And I would also say it's going to be tough, but it was going to be tough regardless because we knew a couple of these guys were going to go in the portal at least. Right. So like we probably knew Sean Padula was going to test the waters. He might come back to Virginia Tech. He said very well that he's open to coming back to Virginia Tech. And I think if he does, you'd feel really good about that, at least having some veteran leadership out there.
And we can bitch and moan about the total number of guys that had hopped in the portal. But do you really care out there about John Camden hopping in the portal? No disrespect to John Camden, but you don't care.
Yeah, it's,
like you do not care about that. Yeah, sure. Like Lynn Kidd, you mentioned his deficiencies. Padula, that one hurts. MJ Collins, I would love to have MJ back. He played really well and shot much better at the end of the season. But it was like the last five games. Most of the year, we didn't know which version of MJ Collins was going to show up. And so, again, we go back to the idea that I'm not trying to belittle these guys. I'm not trying to say we don't want any of them back. I'm just trying to say, like, this is something of just like the new world of college athletics, and some of these guys, their production can be replaced.
Yeah, I would also say when people are talking about like, oh, it's like Fuente after 2019 and stuff like that. The difference is the guys who have left Mike Young's program are playing at a much higher level than the guys who left Fuente's program, who were going, when we talked about it, it was a big topic on your show. Like they were all going to like FCS schools,
right?
And backups in the MAC. The guys leaving Mike Young's program, specifically at the wing position, you have, you know, Darius Maddox scoring like 13 a game at George Mason in the A-10. You had Darren Buchanan scoring double digits in the A-10 as well at George Washington. Rodney Rice is going to be playing in the Big Ten at Maryland. I could probably go on.
Joe Bamisile on his sixth school is doing
Joe Bamisile is rocking it for my VCU Rams. That dude is awesome.
He's been playing well. But like you're right, there's a certain talent level that you've seen. So yeah, we want them here. We want them developing. But he wasn't bringing in scrubs that we had to jettison.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see you're going to see them fill out a roster. I do think they need to change how they develop the wing position, the two and the three guards, because we need those to get are the more guys athletic. Who are leaving. And you hear MJ Collins' comments that he had on 247 today, where he basically just said, hey, I wasn't being played like my position up to my skill set. And he admitted he was very cordial and very professional about it. I don't want to make it sound like he trashed anybody, but he was basically saying, hey, this role that I'm given, I didn't have the ball enough. I wasn't involved enough in the offense. And that's true. I mean, half the season, he just stood in the corner.
And well, let me guess,
he didn't stand at the corner because he was shy.
Listen, so, he was the most athletic person on our team, and I will give him that. But we also have to keep in mind that MJ Collins got more run as a young player than anyone in Mike Young's tenure. Anyone, because Rodney Rice wasn't around. We had to play MJ Collins by default when Hunter went down. And so he got every opportunity to be on the court in the first 2 years of his career. Not something that normally happens under Mike Young. And so let's caveat it with that. He had chances.
True.
And if Mike Young saw a role for him that would have suited him better, I would bet he would have put him in it.
It's going to be interesting in a post-Hunter Couture and potentially post-Sean Padula world. Those guys ate up so many minutes for so many years, and rightfully so. I mean, they both deserved it. Hunter Couture
needed him out.
Maybe Hunter Couture, you maybe didn't want to. Didn't want to take him off the court. With those minutes freed up, although it really, really sucks losing Hunter Couture, who I think a lot of people is one of their favorite Tech basketball players of all time. The good thing about that, though, is you make the staff adjust a little bit, and I think they'll adjust for the better. And I think playing two guys 20 minutes a game might be better for the program in the long haul than playing Hunter Couture 38 minutes a game.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, this is we're getting into the Moneyball type stuff now, right? Like that's what we're talking about here. And we
might have to play some Moneyball. That's what college sports is now. Yeah. It is Moneyball.
We are the Oakland A's of the ACC, apparently, if you talk to some of our constituents. But I think we covered just about everything, and we'll leave it there. But I'm excited to see what happens in the portal over the next couple weeks, because it's going to get wild. And keep in mind, too, that after spring football ends, that portal nonsense is going to get wild. Mm-hmm. I'm already scared of some of our wide receivers getting picked off by another team or something. Like, I'm already getting scared about that stuff.
Before we leave, I just want to shout out baseball.
Yeah, let's talk about
they're baseball. Doing great. D1Baseball.com came out with their midseason Omaha projections. They have Virginia Tech as the number 23 overall seed. That's a 2 seed. They had them slotted in the Vanderbilt Regional. They're looking really good right now. I think they could. They'll definitely be in the spot to host a regional. With some of these series coming up, they could find their way into a top eight. If you look at the schedule, it plays out really nicely. They have Georgia Tech. They have Wake Forest, who is on a bit of a weird downward spiral.
All right, let me ask you something about Wake. So weren't they like preseason number one or two?
Consensus. All five ranking systems had them at number one. They have three All-American – all three of their weekend starters, All-Americans, and All-American closer. Nick Kurtz can hit a ball a mile.
What happened? What's going on? I mean, you don't have to explain Wake Forest baseball a ton. I'm just curious. Like, do they have injuries?
It's a couple of bullpen injuries, but guys just, like, they've just kind of been getting hit. Like, okay. There are a lot of fastball pitchers, and there are a lot of guys who just kind of scare you with velocity, and guys aren't swinging at stuff outside the zone, and when they are connecting on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, the ball goes really far. So, guys, I mean, their ERA is like 13th, or they have the 7th ERA in the ACC, so they're middle-of-the-pack ERA pitching staff right now. They're 13th in offensive batting average. Like, they're second to last. So these guys just haven't been playing really well. They have played a very tough schedule. They've played UVA. They've played Duke. They've played UNC. Those are probably the three.
Did they play Clemson?
Four or five best. They have not played Clemson yet.
Clemson, we are avoiding Clemson, which is nice.
We are avoiding Clemson, and we are avoiding NC State.
Yeah.
That is huge. So Tech has Georgia Tech coming up, which will be a tough series, but one where Virginia Tech is the better team. And then, of course, the Wake Forest series. After that, they have back-to-back series at home against Duke and then at the road on UNC. Those will be the two series that decide what Tech's seeding will be. If they can go 3-3 in those six games, I think they'll host a regional. If they go 4-2, 5-1, they'll be a top eight seed.
I mean, Duke and UNC right now are both top 10 teams for the listeners. Mm-hmm. Like that, those are really big series, and UVA and Wake are top 25 teams. So
I think Clemson has played really – Clemson and Virginia Tech are very similar, where they've played really well, but there does seem – unless the offense just gets unconscionably hot, there does seem to be a ceiling. Wake Forest, Virginia, UNC, Duke, all of those teams can win a national title, and it would not surprise anybody. And I think Tech plays Miami. Miami has been the cardiac Canes this year. They've won on a ton of walk-offs. They're really fun offensive teams. Like,
so
it's going to get really hard for Virginia Tech.
And the projection was Miami in the tournament?
Miami was in the tournament. There were nine
ACC teams. They were the ninth team, yeah. Because there's eight teams ranked, and then they would be the ninth. Because Miami's not ranked right now, which is weird.
Well, you also have NC State hanging around as well, and Boston College is hanging around. They were in the last four out. So the record is 10 from a conference. The SEC has done it twice. So there is a world where both the ACC and the SEC get 10 teams into the field of 68. The sport is pretty concentrated in these two conferences.
So we're number 11 in, I think it's D1Baseball.com. But in the projection, we were the 23rd seed. Is that a reflection of our record? I mean, it's schedule. Schedule. Our reflection of our schedule.
Yeah. I mean, Tech didn't have any big non-conference, and they usually don't. Not a big non-conference game, marquee. And I'll be honest, they've played four ACC series. I think they've played against the four bottom teams in the conference.
Right.
In Pitt, Louisville,
Notre Dame,
Boston College, and Notre Dame. I think Boston College and Louisville could play their way into the middle of the pack. They have talent, but they don't have that signature win yet. So that's why this weekend is really important. That home series against Duke are really important. I have full faith in this team. They're playing so, so well. Like Carson DeMartini has been amazing. 1 through 9, this lineup is really good. They have freshmen playing really well. The pitching has been – I was terrified of the pitching. I was talking to people who cover the sport nationally preseason, and they were like, it's a joke nationally how good the offense is going to be and how bad the pitching is going to be. Well, joke's on them because – Virginia Tech's pitching, I think they have the fourth best ERA in the conference right now.
Wow. And
it's sensational what they have done this season.
What's sensational is your passion for VT baseball, which has been ongoing for several years now. And it's cool because we can add it to the 2Deep repertoire as we move forward here. But let's close it out. We're at an hour and 35 minutes. Colby was great earlier in the show. Got a lot of good nuggets for people out there who've been dying for some spring practice insight. We will be coming with more overarching questions at the spring game pregame show, talking a little Brent Pry, talking a little position groups in terms of who can make an impact and maybe over unders. Sam, you got to hit us with the props for the spring game again. You got to hit the books this weekend.
I think we're going first play pass at like -120. I'm feeling that.
Yeah, we need totals. We need yardage. We need all kinds of good stuff. But anyway, that's going to do it for the pod. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. It's at 2DVT. Instagram, also at 2DVT. We're getting more followers on Instagram all the time. And I think there's going to be an event posted for the pregame show on Facebook soon enough. I know it's Facebook, but a lot of people are still on Facebook, and it's a great way to remind you of events. The spring jam's up there, and soon enough, the pregame show will be up there as well. So hit that up. If you want to email us anything, it's at 2deepvt@gmail.com. And until next time, go Hokies.
Go Hokies.